If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast, Season 6, Episode 53. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We also have... Well, we don't have Jaime Lopez. What am I saying?
The invisible and silent Jaime Lopez Jr. has joined us.
We do not have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the show today, once again. Alrighty.
Traveling the wilds of America.
Yes, on planes and trains and automobiles. A couple of fact check things. The Sex Pistols movie, I couldn't remember the name of, was called The Great Rock and Roll Swindle. And it was a compilation of live stuff and pre-recorded things that they did for that, including the famous Sid Vicious rendition of My Way. And interestingly, Johnny Lydon was done with the band by that time. He was touring with Pill, Public Image Limited. Mm-hmm. So he was done with the Sex Pistols. So the footage that's in the movie of him is archival footage. Hmm. He was not a Sex Pistol at the time. He's a Sex Pistol now, but there you go. And the movie, I couldn't remember, where Robin Williams was the King of the Moon with the flying head, with the head flying around like the Vision Pro when mm-hmm. you're in Persona mode, was The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. And that's the, that was the movie that Sarah Polley was.
Yeah, she's a little girl, yeah.
Not treated very well.
Yeah.
There were like days where she was soaking wet. And this is why she very rarely puts children in movies that she does. Yeah, I think her last movie had her kids in it, but yeah, she wouldn't put other people's kids through that. So, not so good. Considering, Terry Gilliam has a lot of children in his movies.
Yeah.
Alrighty. And yeah, so I picked up this story early last week in the headlines. Apple apparently has led the way, some sort of like a record 72 Emmy nominations in the upcoming Emmy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And you sprinkled like a couple of extra stories to go along with that too, right?
Yeah. So on the Apple definitely had a really impressive number of nominations. Not so much on the nerdy side. On the nerdy side, we got some, it was not, I would say, a great number of things that were nominated, but Fallout got some love. We got a little bit of love for, you know, What We Do in the Shadows, X-Men 97. So the surprise for me was Netflix's Three Body Problem got nominated for Best Drama.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, which, you know, it's up against some pretty heavy swingers with, like, The Crown, The Gilded Age, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Slow Horses, Shogun, like, sure. What We Do in the Shadows got a couple of nominations. Walt Goggins got a nomination for lead actor in a drama for Fallout, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, I haven't watched that yet. I know you said it was really good. X-Men 97, Blue Eye Samurai, both got nominated for Best Animated Series, which is good. But yeah, it wasn't what I would call a banner year for nerdy stuff getting nominated. It wasn't great. A lot of the familiars, The Bear got nominated for like a ton of stuff. Slow Horses, it was a pretty good run for Apple TV Plus. The Morning Show, Slow Horses, lots of nominations there. But
circling back on The Three Body Problem, I didn't realize that. I don't know if you remember the pick that I did a couple of years ago of a movie, Chinese movie called The Wandering Earth, which was really had amazing special effects in it.
Yeah.
It was written by the same author. Chixin Liu, I don't know if that's the right way to say his name, but that's how I'm saying it. He's the writer of The Three Body Problem, but he also wrote The Wandering Earth, too. Hmm. The Wandering Earth. Also, there is a Wandering Earth, too, apparently, but I don't know if it's related.
Yeah. Shogun got lots of love. I got nominated for...
So did Slow Horses. Slow Horses?
Yeah. Slow Horses, Best Drama Series for that.
And Best Actor, too, I think,
Gary Oldman got nominated, but then Hiroyuki Sadada got nominated for Shogun too, and it also got lead actress for Anna Sawai too. So that was a pretty good debut. That's been on my to-do list for a while. I really got to sit down and watch that limited series.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I like the original.
Yeah, I remember the original from back in the day. This is
Richard Chamberlain.
Quite a bit different. I'm not sure who the main actor is, but I should know who he is. But
for the new one, yeah, I've seen him, but I don't recognize him.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of interesting. You know, we all knew who Richard Chamberlain was because he was Dr. Kildare back in the day, right?
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So interesting to see what happens with these when are the Omni Emmys broadcasting, do you know?
I believe it's in September.
That's a ways away.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of shows that we picked are going to be there as well, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a pretty good cross-section of what's happening on TV, but just because of the way the seasons fell, there was no House of the Dragon to be nominated. There was, like, some of the stuff that we've been talking about just wasn't eligible, so it is what it is.
Was it eligible?
Because there wasn't a season when they were, like, the period for which they nominate for this chunk.
Okay.
There was no season of House of the Dragon and some of the other shows that we watch that sometimes get nominated, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean, so the next story is kind of Comic-Con related. I don't know if you've got anything to add for Comic-Con, but is it on now or is this weekend, I think, coming
today
up?
Today is the first day, technically. Okay. But on the first day, there's not a ton of announcements. I took a look before we sat down to do this to see if there was anything new. There was some new, you know, some new toys that were announced and stuff today, but the real meat of it is going to be on the weekend. Right. Saturday, Sunday is when you get a lot more of the panels. This was to be a big Marvel event. This was to be a big DC event. So we're going to be able to come back next week and we'll have a real recap of all the things we've seen. I think we're going to see a lot of trailers. We're going to get some scheduling for when some things are going to hit. We're hoping that there's supposed to be a Star Trek panel. We're hoping we might get a date for Lower Decks this weekend for when the final season is going to come out this year. So lots of stuff to come. Just we need a few more days.
Well, the lead story that I put here is this came out a week ago or so, was that Rebecca Ferguson is going to be in attendance at Comic-Con. So I guess they're talking about the next season of the Comic-Con, or either that, or they're just making their debut for a panel interview, I guess.
I have a feeling we're going to see a trailer for Silo and maybe a date. I think that based on what I had seen of where, like, they, I knew they had wrapped filming already for season two. I wasn't sure if they were going to be ready, but it's, it seems like we might get a trailer and a date this week, because they're saying it could come in this year. We'll see it before the end of 2024, which would be amazing.
But do you know, like, I understand there's three books, right? Do you know where this, have you watched the first season of Silo, or?
Yeah. I watched the first season of Silo, and I've read the first book. And the first season of Silo is the first half of the first book. The second season of Silo will be the second half of the first book.
Okay.
So in theory, you could do the whole thing in 5 or 6 seasons if it was, you know, obviously profitable and whatever else. Although what profit is in the streaming area, I really don't know. But it'll be interesting to see if and how they go forward with the rest of this story, because it changes a little bit. I've started reading the second book, and some of the characters change and stuff like that, and sort of told in a different way. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. But for those people who invested with Rebecca Ferguson and her character in the first one, the second season is really focused on that character. So it's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah. And speaking of your comment about profit, I read something the other day that Apple's profit from streaming is about 0.01% of what Netflix's is.
Yeah. But they don't need it to be, right? Like, it's a loss leader at this point. But then there was also a story not that long ago that said that Apple is going to start scaling down its investment a little bit.
That's what I mean.
Because they really did what a lot of services do. They needed to build a lot of content to build a library so that people would come in, and then they can slow the pace down. Now we're getting to the slow the pace down. So I don't think you're going to see quite as many series just getting renewed or series just rolling out, because they don't need to just continually fill the coffers of content.
There's a ton of stuff on Apple TV. I don't know if you've noticed lately. It's all over the board, right? But
it is. And again, like, they are swinging for the fences, like big names, big stars, big directors, big budgets. Again, they can afford it, but at the same time, it's also, you know, you can't sustain it forever.
Right.
Yeah. So I've got a piece here from a recent story from the good folks at Hollywood Reporter, who had an exclusive that's kind of spread everywhere now, of course, that the Russo brothers are in talks with Marvel to potentially return and direct the next two Avengers movies. That's pretty cool.
What did they do before, just for those of us driving home?
So they did arguably the three best Marvel movies. They did Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and then they did Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame.
Oh, okay.
So, like basically 3 for 3 on killer movies. So I think the idea is that, you know, they did such a good job of those team-up movies, particularly those last two, where, you know, you've got a lot of stuff to juggle. And, you know, when you're building towards those Avengers team up-y kind of things, it's going to be really important to have people who know how to handle all the stars and all the pressure that comes with it. And the Russos, they make a great fit. So, I should mention the other movie that they directed was Captain America Civil War. So they did three in Avengers 3 and 4. So basically the four best Marvel movies are all them. So,
well, does Deadpool not fall into that
Deadpool
category?
Is not strictly an MCU movie either, right? But it's exciting.
As we learned today, right?
The prospects of having these two come back and do this is exciting, because obviously their quality of their movies is very high. And I'm thinking maybe this weekend, as part of Comic-Con, we might get more details on the shuffling of stuff, because they were going to do Avengers Kang Dynasty and they were going to do Avengers Secret Wars. But I don't know if they're going to still do Kang Dynasty, given that they had to fire the lead actor who was playing Kang after being convicted of assault. Mm. And so I don't know if they're going to recast or announce a recasting this weekend, or if they're going to announce that they're changing the storyline. So we'll see what comes out of that. But either way, I will take a Russo Brothers Marvel movie, yes, please, with extra sprinkles on top. This one, it was interesting. So Inside Out 2, which is still in theaters around the world right now, made history this week by becoming the highest grossing animated movie of all time. It eclipsed Frozen 2, which was apparently super popular. I've seen it. It was fine. $1.462 billion US dollars is how much we've now seen for Inside Out 2, and it's still in theaters, so it will most likely eclipse a $1.5 billion fairly easily. I really enjoyed the first one. I thought it was a really, really enjoyable movie. I look forward to watching Inside Out 2 when it comes to Disney Plus. But that is that's a massive number. And it's funny because this has been a bit of a disappointing year across the box office. Right up until this last few weeks, we actually got this that's performed really well. We got the new Despicable Me movie that's performed really well. And we got Twisters, the 25 years later sequel to Twister that is in theaters right now that also had a very successful box office debut last week. So yeah, maybe that and Deadpool and Wolverine are coming out this week. So maybe we'll start to see things going better for the film industry because it has been a tough year.
Yeah, but of all time, it's still irrespective of the fact that it's been a tough year. They've eclipsed everything, including pre-pandemic
stuff. Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously there are factors. There are factors like ticket price and everything else. But yeah, there's no doubt that this is a huge home run for Disney, so good for them. And the last thing I've got in our headlines here is, so a lot of fun stuff coming up around the Deadpool and Wolverine movie. We were talking about it today when you and I went and saw the movie, that they were putting out these funny popcorn, you know, containers and stuff like that. The best item I've seen so far from the Deadpool pile of paraphernalia is the new Xbox controller that was designed quote unquote by Deadpool. And it has butt cheeks is I guess the best way to put it. It's bootylicious. It's it's got a booty on the back of it, which, you know, of course, that's a running gag in Deadpool, you know, wearing the tight leather pants. But I've never seen anything quite like this. I will have the link in our show notes for those of you transporting at home. And yeah, it's very funny looking and it's very hilarious. So definitely make the time to look this one up because it's pretty good.
Yeah. There was a lot of without giving too much away, there was a lot of play around his costume.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially the fitting of his costume at one point. Yeah. Yeah, he was, he commented on the hands-on approach that they use. Let's put it that way. Okay, so let's move on to the main part of the show. This time we're talking about a couple of finales. Two finales and one continuing on. So a couple of weeks ago, a couple of weekends ago, we had the finale of The Acolyte, the Star Wars film, show, TV, whatever, season one, episode 8, and this was called The Acolyte, yeah. Right?
Right on the nose, they nailed
Interesting. Okay. All right, so what were your impressions of this
particular episode? Yeah, for my elevator pitch, I simply had, to quote Jaime Lopez Jr., hold my beer. We weren't sure if they were going to be able to stick the landing, given that they kind of had a lot of stuff to deal with. And what they gave us was a super fast-paced episode with some real high highs, but maybe some low lows too. I don't think it was the best finale that we've seen, but I also don't think it was the worst. I think there were some things to love. I thought that the best pew 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 I had was the sword fight between Master Soul and the Stranger was incredible. I mean, you know, we have rarely seen that level of high level artistry inside of a lightsaber fight, clearly doing, you know, Chinese martial arts style wire work, some really big ambitious stuff, you know, the throwing of the lightsabers and using the force to manipulate them. We saw a force blast from Soul. So that was like some really, really, really cool stuff in there. But some of the twists and turns, you know, the sort of way they sort of hand waved, you know, how May had survived initially when she fell in the flashback episodes was a little like meh. There was a little bit too much they were trying to get in there because they were like cutting back and forth between sort of the political side on Coruscant and then also trying to deal with May and the Stranger's relationship and then Osha and the. Osha and the Stranger and May and Soul, just trying to pull all these strings together and cut all these scenes back and forth. And then they're throwing in cameos, and it just felt a little overloaded for my taste. That being said, when I saw Darth Plagueis creeping around on the planet that Osha and the Stranger were on, I was like, oh my God, it's Darth Plagueis. So that was pretty exciting. You know, getting to see a lightsaber corrupted, bled was a real cool moment. I mean, we know that is how that happens. There's a great comic book story from the Darth Vader comic book series from the past number of years where we see him get his lightsaber and bleed it. But to see that in live action, to see a crystal turn was a really neat thing to experience. I think just, it's funny because I had read or I heard an interview with Leslie Headland, the showrunner for this series, and she had sort of said, we weren't sure if we're going to get a second season, so we kind of tried to wrap things up. I'm not sure we did a good job of wrapping things up. This is clearly stage set for a second season, at least one right. more season.
Yeah.
So I can't say it ended in a satisfying bow. If they don't get a second season, this will, I think, be a pretty big disappointment. But if they do, they've set the stage for some really interesting developments. You know, we found out in this final episode, and of course, spoilers are in play for him from here on, but we found it in the final episode that there is clearly a relationship between Master Venestra and the Stranger. She specifically references the fact that this is, you know, a former pupil of hers. We get Darth Plagueis. Of course, we know Darth Plagueis from the parable that the Emperor tells Anakin in Revenge of the Sith. And we also get, Master Yoda has a cameo at the end. You know, even if it's just his ears from behind, he's pretty unmistakable. So they kind of set the stage for, you know, a pretty good season two if it's coming. But as I say, I'm just a little worried that it was a bit of a contentious show. Some people were, you know, clearly troll bombing it and being really hostile about it online. Even though we got, you know, two of the best, like two top five all time lightsaber fights within these eight episodes. We got, you know, the initial battle between the Stranger and all the other Jedi. And then we got this finale fight between Sol and the Stranger that were both real bangers. So I don't know. What'd you think?
I thought it was good, but yeah, you're right. It was a bit kind of checklisty, kind of, you know, as we kind of expected it would be. I mean, the last, you know, the last second reveal of Yoda's ears kind of sets it up for you know, obviously that sets it up to be continued kind of idea, right? But I don't know if that was even necessary, but I guess they just wanted to show Venestra's relationship that she's not, you know, mind you, because she did seem like the kick-ass leader of the whole thing all the way through, right? So,
and but then we also see her doing some things which are
questionable,
kind of unscrupulous. So,
yeah, there, I mean, lack of scruples seems to be a really interesting plot point in this whole series, right? Because you've got, you know, the Carrie-Anne Moss character having
a cover up,
bit of a cover up there, and Saul covering up this whole thing for all this time, you know, Torben couldn't live with what he had done, and Saul manages to live with what he's done, right? So, I mean, it does blow up good. I mean, I think what is it, two episodes ago when we lost, a couple of main characters was kind of
Yordan
disappointing, but I mean, the whole gist of this show is they're all going to die anyway, right? So it's not quite Rogue One because where we know they all die, but it's kind of, you're not expecting, like, a character like Jackie, you know, you want her to live. You want her to sort of have adventures and, you know, but to have her leave the show in episode six, you know, although the showrunner did say that there could be future past stories of these people. But, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know, it's kind of anticlimactic when you already know the character's dead and you're going to go back and tell another story about them. Like, we know how it ends, you know, what's the point?
The quote that we hear from Senator Rayancourt midway through the episode, I think really was the sort of the summary of the series. And I think it talks about what you talked about with Saul and Venestra, and to a lesser extent, May and Osha, when he's talking to Venestra and he says, "I think the Jedi are a massive system of unchecked power posing as a religion, a delusional cult that claims to control the uncontrollable, not the Force, your emotions." And that, I think, was a really, like, obviously a bit of a coda as far as the mission statement for this series, that, you know, Saul couldn't control his emotions, Torben couldn't control his emotions. And it is kind of an indictment, and he's not wrong, isn't it? It's an indictment of the Jedi system. You know, when you take these kids away from their parents and tell them not to have attachments, and yeah, of course you're going to have these people who are disaffected and damaged and everything else. You know, it almost does, as it should, it ties into the whole thing Luke Skywalker says in the newest trilogy, where he says it's time for the Jedi to die. Like, the Jedi system's not great, you know, like their morality and what they were trying to do as far as like teaching these kids that have these abilities to how to use them and to be productive members of society. But they're also taking kids from their families and teaching them to not be emotional. And yet that's impossible. Like, it seems like this is basically saying, what happened with Anakin was inevitable, you know?
Right. Yeah.
That somebody would be so emotionally unstable that they would collapse the Jedi like a house of cards. And yeah, like this is a really interesting look at that from the outside perspective of 100 years before the events of that. Right.
Yeah. And it all circles back to the A New Hope, where when Obi-Wan Kenobi is talking about the golden age of Jedi, you know, we've never been able to actually see that, right? Because there's never been a, you know, pure King Arthur's round table kind of approach to the Jedi.
Yeah, and they should be flawed. Like, I don't want to see, like, the perfect era of the Jedi. There shouldn't be one. They should always have issues, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They'd be dull if they were just, like, completely inevitably would eat themselves because constantly be thirsting for power, because if you're going to embrace traditions like that, obviously it leads to, you know, all the stuff that's going to lead you to think, oh, I should be in charge. Oh, I should do that. So eventually one of the ancient Sith Lords basically created this rule of two, saying there should always just be one master and one acolyte or apprentice. And the idea is that eventually that apprentice will, you know, overcome and become the master and take another. But here we see Plagueis lurking around, clearly becoming the acolyte to the stranger. So how does that fit with the whole everything we know about the rule of two? I heard some people saying, well, that's breaking canon. Now, I don't think that's the case. Obviously, they're gonna explain it somehow. Is this, you know, the stranger is trying to recruit somebody because he wants to become the master? We know that won't happen, because we know down the road that Plagueis becomes Palpatine's master. So, you know, Plagueis lives for like 200 years. So we know he is going to be he is the Sith Lord in this era, and he is going to be the Sith Lord. So the stranger is a limited character in his function, right? But he also says he's a lot older than he seems. So maybe he is from a species that doesn't age as well. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff to tap into if they decide to do a season two. I saw a story from Leslie Headland this week where she said she has not heard any word at all about that, but she's thinking about where they'd like to go. So I don't know. Maybe they will come back and do a season two, and this will make even more sense, or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It was an interesting, entertaining series. You know, I don't know. I mean, like, they've had some real, like, you know, hitting for the fences. Like you said, The Mandalorian was great. You know, Boba Fett was pretty good.
Yeah. Boba Fett was a little up and down.
Yeah, and the Obi-Wan Kenobi story had a lot of promise, but it had a couple of flaws, a couple of big flaws, I guess. Andor was amazing.
Right? Andor was amazing.
So compared to Andor, kind of set the bar for this for these shows, right? I guess. Acolyte's not there. Right?
Acolyte is not Andor. It certainly is at no risk. I would say it's solidly in the middle of the pack. It wasn't the worst Star Wars series we've seen so far by any means, and it did add some really interesting new stuff to the canon. But ultimately, in an 8-episode season, unless this was always intended to be multiple seasons, it wasn't a satisfying experience. There was just lots of good stuff.
It was interesting that they didn't use the S word in this. in this series at all, you know? Skywalker.
Something. Although, the illusions are there to it, right? They kind of talk about, you know, prophecy and destiny, and it's supposed to evoke that. I'm surprised after all those little musical cues we got about the Ren stuff, that the we heard Kylo's music, they hit it multiple times, and Leslie Headlin confirmed herself. She's like, yeah, that was deliberate. We did that on purpose, but they never really went with it. And maybe that's obvious, like, that would be an obvious place for them to go in season two, is to say, you know, the stranger is destined to become the original, Knight of Ren, and therefore he's not really a Sith, and therefore it doesn't violate the rule of two, or however they could go with that. So there's ways they can do this stuff in a logical way, but ultimately, I think, it needs a second season, or otherwise it's going to be two really awesome sword fights and a little bit of stuff connecting them.
All right, let's move on to the House of Dragon. We got two episodes to cover this time. Season 2, Episode 6, and Episode 5. Well, you get them in reversed order. So, yeah, Regent and Smallfolk.
Yes, Episodes 5 and 6. So, So, Regent is the episode that follows the dramatic dragon battle. So, we saw Mellice, the dragon, and Rhaenys, the rider, die at the end of episode 4. That was a huge moment. And here we get an episode. They're parading Mellice's head through the streets of King's Landing, which Kristen Cole thinks is a great idea, but it's actually a terrible idea because people are just like, oh, that's going to end badly. You just killed one of their dragons.
I thought they did that to hide the fact that they were bringing the king back.
I think they were to an extent, but also I think, in the same way, it was basically, I think it was supposed to be Kristen Cole was trying to emulate what Otto did, because Otto paraded Jaehaerys, the little kid's body, through the streets so that people could feel empathy. And what Kristen thought, oh, I'm the hand now, I'll do the same thing. I'll parade this dragon's head through the streets and people will be like, wow, our king is Otto. But what it actually did was make people think, oh God, Rhaenyra is going to be furious. This war just got really scary. And beyond that, it also, you hear one of the, you know, people say loudly, like, oh, it's just meat. And you have to remember that at this point, to the small folk, the dragons are like gods. They're like, you know, it's like showing up in an F-15 during, you know, the Middle Ages, right? They think of these things as just absolute miracles. So when you show it as this thing that's gotten its head chopped off, people are like, oh, well, you could just chop their heads off. So he kind of drops the ball on that, and you know, we see that payoff, and we'll talk about that in a bit in episode 6, that, you know, it kind of destabilizes things a little bit. The episode was, it was a catch-up episode. It was a lot more talky-talky and a little bit less actiony, but after you have three dragons have a fight and see the king get mortally wounded, and you see one of the princesses of the Targaryen dynasty die. There's nowhere to go but down, I guess, a little bit. Although they tried their hardest by having Daemon have a sex dream about his mom in that episode, which was really upsetting. When that scene first came on, I thought for a second, I'm like, well, she's blonde, so she's clearly a Targaryen. I was like, is that supposed to be his brother's wife? And then she starts talking, and I was like, oh, no, that's not good. So the idea is that he's clearly, you know, whether it's he's being drugged, whether it's he's being haunted, but he's clearly like losing his marbles in Harrenhal. And that, you know, continues from the previous episode and into the subsequent episode. I think so, too. You know, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, she's manipulating him and, you know, messing with his mind, and which bridge too far for, you know, even for House of the Dragon. House of the Dragon, like, the Targaryens have this sort of leave. They're allowed to marry siblings to one another and cousins to one another, but parent and child is still a bridge that even the Targaryens don't cross. So that was pretty weird. But yeah, and you know, in the end, basically the big development out of this fifth episode is that there's the moment between Jace and Rhaenyra where they are trying to figure out, well, we've got more of these dragons. What are we going to do about this? We're not going to win unless we can get some riders for these dragons. And so they have the inspired idea of, well, what if we try and have enough Targaryen blood for these things to respond?
Well, I thought they were going after the half-breeds because I thought they were going to go for that one guy that was
headed that way.
Yeah, well, they did find him. The dragon does find, and we're talking about in small folk now, right? They did find, the dragon did pick somebody because the dragon picks you, right?
And that's it. So we get both ends of the spectrum. It's the beginning of the episode. They bring out poor Sir Stefan Darklyn, who, you know, was one of the king's queen's guards. And they're like, well, you're part, you know, you have some of our blood in you, you know, maybe you can give this a try. And he's like, I totally will. And so he tries to mount Seasmoke, and Seasmoke looks like he's going to go for it and then changes his mind and kills poor Sir Stefan in a burst of flames. But then you're right. At the end of the episode, we see that Seasmoke, you know, they're right. Seasmoke is ready for another rider because this was Laenor, Rhaenyra's ex-husband, the one who was gay and faked his death. We see that he's ready for another rider, and he chases down poor Allen, right? Allen, who we now know is Corlys Velaryon's legitimate son. And, you know, we saw the preview for the next episode, but we see them on the beach. Rhaenyra and her dragon and Seasmoke and Allen are sort of facing, like, they're just, you know, and she's like, who are you and why are you riding around on a dragon? So, I mean, that was a pretty cool sequence, too, where he's just like, oh my God, I'm going to die. And the dragon's like, I want to play.
Doing the downward dragon.
Yeah. But that was a good episode too. I thought Small Folk really, you know, the way they sort of not just open hostile warfare, the subversive warfare we see start some of the fruits of
the White Worm, yeah.
The White Worm, yeah, trying to go Missaria, trying to get the Small Folk to get riled up about what's going on. They, you know, they send in these care packages. They basically, they're starving them out. They're the one with the blockade in place that's starving people out, and then they send in the food to be like, but we love you. And then we get, you know, a little bit more of like they want you know what kind of happened. They want people to turn. So we see that scene when they're like, you know, Rhaenyra thinks of us, Rhaenyra loves us, and then they see Alicent and her daughter Helena, and they're like throwing dead fish at them and stuff. I saw a little behind the scenes clip on that one too, and apparently they wanted to, you know, make it look real, so they threw a dead fish at Olivia Cooke, and she said, I was game for it, but then I found out that the extra they had throwing it at my face was a former professional cricket player. And he like just nails her the side of the face with the dead fish.
Oh, really?
One of the things I did while we were off last week was I started reading Fire and Blood book on which this series is based, because I thought, oh, you know, I'm into this. I should sit down and finally read the book. So I started reading the book. So I'm going to avoid spoilers. But what I will say is in the difference between the text and the story is that they've streamlined some of it, you know, as they did with the book. You can't have, like, you know, 60 characters. You have to decide on the top, you know, 15 you want to focus on. So the part that I thought was really interesting about this episode was the part with Princess Rhaena, who is Daemon's daughter, in the Vale with the kids. And she starts talking with the Lady of the Vale and says, well, actually, we've got a dragon here. We've, you know, because she sees the burnt sheep and says, you know, what's going on here? And they figure out that there's a wild dragon living in the Vale, too. You know, in the story, as I've read it, that character is Rhaena is not the one who meets up with that dragon. So they've clearly written out another character and are sort of combining storylines, which is always interesting to see how they're going to do that. But I'm glad, because I don't think we need a lot more characters this season. We've already been introduced to Adam and Alan on Driftmark. We've got introduced to all the new characters at Harrenhal. We've got, you know, Otto's son, Gawain, who got introduced. Now we've got, you know, characters in the Vale. Like, it'll get too big if we keep adding. And they keep talking about Alicent's other son, Darren, that he came up again this week, Darren the Daring. So clearly they're teasing that that's going to be a thing down the road. So yeah, it just feels like we're growing in scope. And there really feels like they're setting the stage for this to be like, you know, big finish in the last two episodes of the season. It feels like there's a lot of stuff to sort of explore and get into. Not the least of which is that, you know, there are multiple armies all sort of converging. So this could get good.
Yeah, but then again, they've only got two. I mean, the episodes are long, it seems to me, right?
So they are. They're hour 10 plus, yeah.
Yeah, so it does seem that there's a lot of time to fill things in. But, interesting. And, I mean, like, you know, Game of Thrones was so much better story told, you know? Like, it took longer for... I guess there was a lot more political stuff going on, you know, with the tired Lannisters and the, you know, the Richard Beans family.
The Starks. Yeah.
Starks and the,
I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about, I really enjoy House of the Dragon. I think it's really well done in Game of Thrones. And I was trying to think about what are the differences? Well, obviously, you know, we grew in time to be attached to different characters. There isn't anyone as compelling as Tyrion in this series. There just isn't.
No. Or Arya, or the big, what was her name?
Brienne. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, we're kind of waiting for some stuff to happen.
Or Jaime Lannister, right? Or Cersei Lannister.
Yeah, well, and that's it. Like, and there's some good characters. I mean, Daemon, the character by Matt Smith, is a really compelling character. He's just so... very gray. He does very heroic and good things, and he does monstrously bad things, and you're just like, I can't decide if I love this guy or hate this guy. And that's what George R. R. Martin is so talented at. But I like the way
Aemon, once he becomes the regent, takes over and kicks
that his mom was the off part the council, I think we should talk about, you know? For sure, because that was like, yeah, you know, what's the joke? Oh, if it isn't the consequences of my actions finally coming home to roost, you know, like.
Well, and she says to him, like, you know, oh, are your, is this the scars of your youth? Like, she said something about the scars
of your youth. Oh, I have that quote written down. She says, have the indignities of your childhood not been sufficiently avenged? That was such a great line. No, but she's right. Like, Aemon has always wanted this, and he is, now he's like, I can finally do what I want. I'm going to kill those people who wronged me, irrespective of the fact that one of those is his brother, the king. Like, and she can see it, and she knows how deeply traumatized he is. And it's funny, because in that moment, you flash back to the first season when he was this little boy and they brought the pig out, you know, the pink dragon and whatever, the pink dread. Yeah, you totally get that, right? You get that, like, real bummer. That he is just still a sad little boy inside. And yeah, that's pretty messed up. That's pretty messed up. The other thing that I thought was really, like, her getting, first her not getting, Alicent not getting the regent position, which she wanted last episode, was a pretty, you know, well, we couldn't put you on the crown, on the throne, because we didn't want Rhaenyra there, and we can't put a woman on there. If you can't be the woman on there, because we said we couldn't put women on there. That's pretty funny. And then this week, she's like disagreeing with Aemon, and Aemon's like, why don't you go knit or something? Like, oof, damn. So for her to go from such lofty heights and to realize that it's all kind of come crashing down is pretty awful.
Yeah, but that does happen in real life too, though. Like, you have the responsibility of running the place, and then they hire a new consultant or whatever. Yeah. And
oh, I think people who've worked in an office environment have seen that happen.
Yeah, thousands of times. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I guess we might want to touch on is just the bit of an interesting twist towards the end of the episode when we get a bit of a romantic moment, and it's unexpected. Ooh. Between Rhaenyra and Missaria,
yeah.
Where, you know, Missaria has, you know, sort of says to her, you know, which is, yeah, something that's not part of the text, I can tell you from what I've read. So a show invention, but really interesting. Like, you know, obviously there's kind of some sparks going on with Daemon where he is. And, you know, so, yeah, it's interesting that sort of sparked, kind of came out of left field a little bit. Although when you go back and you see the kind of relationship they've been building over the past few episodes, it kind of does make sense. So, yeah, interesting. I think I'll be disappointed if we don't see a little more pew pew in the next episode, just because these last two were, as you said, very political, very conversational. You know, I think I want to see some
dragon on dragon firefights, right?
Well, either that or you know, just a battle. Like we said, there's multiple armies headed towards Harrenhal. The Northmen are coming down. The Lannisters, for some reason packed a lion on their trip, are coming. We've got, you know, Daemon trying to raise the Riverlords and trying to figure out how to get along nicely with the Riverlords. And so I feel like all that's going to kind of come to a head over these last couple episodes. So I think we're teased up for what should be a really fun and exciting ending to this season. But yeah, it's crazy how fast it's gone. We only have two episodes left.
Cool.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy. And watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, let's move on to The Boys, which season 4.
What was the name of the last episode, Tim?
Well, it was originally called Assassination Run, but now it's been changed to season 4 finale because of some unnamed ex-president had a run-in with a shooter. And
Yeah. So. The assassination is not the most favorite word out there right now. And I understand, obviously, for our American friends, that's a pretty scary thing. So.
But they didn't. I mean, like, in as much as this show kind of tries to parallel the current situation out there.
Shockingly prescient.
Yeah, except that as of Sunday, it's no longer, because they didn't see the plot twist that came in real life. Right.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. But it was a banger of a finish. Like, I really thought, just like we talked about with the Acolyte, I was like, how are they going to land this? They've got so much stuff to cover. They have to get of, you know, who is Ryan's family really? You know, they kind of had to pay off the whole, you know, conspiracy with the president what's her name? Newman. The vice president, and how that was going to play out. Like, there was a lot of cross things. And then, of course, we had the whole, you know, the virus thing. And so So there was a lot of threads to tie up, but I thought they did a pretty decent job. I'm not sure I loved the montage they did at the end of, like, basically, you know, the Homelander sort of takes control and the boys get kind of rounded up with the exception of Danny. Yeah, I thought this was definitely a lot of stuff to manage in the final episode. I'm excited about where they're going for this final season. Obviously, this is kind of where it's felt like it had been building towards, you know, what if Homelander essentially gets supreme power? How are the boys going to manage it? Turns out not well. Mm-hmm. Butcher kind of completely goes unhinged. Mm-hmm. And the real sort of dun 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 of the episode is the coda where we see Soldier Boy is still in play. So next season we could get the return of Soldier Boy, who's a real potential thorn in the side of Homelander. So that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Overall, I'd say this, you know, I've seen some different mixed things about the season. Some people really love it. Some people are a little more lukewarm on it, but I really enjoyed the season. I think it did an excellent job of holding up a mirror to current political landscape, not just in America, but globally, just some of these unfortunately populist, you know, politicians who are trying to blame things on each other and turn people against each other. And it just, it was an interesting reflection of the kind of modern politics that we're dealing with right now. And it does set the stage for a pretty climactic final season. So that's exciting.
Yes. Yeah. We also lost the VP in this episode too, right?
We did. Yeah. I mean, that was sort of a twist too, where, you know, she volunteers to turn herself in and things are going to look like they're going to take the right turn. And then in the wake of you know, and we did get a not small death in this one because Ryan accidentally kills Mallory, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a tipping point when he kills Mallory and he leaves. Butcher just sort of leans into the dark side, the Kessler character that has been sort of represented his dark side, sort of wins and then rips Newman in half at one point in a pretty gory scene. So, yeah, it's yeah, it was definitely a big episode. I guess that means your neighborhood won't be back on the screen next year.
Well, just on a side note, I think I mentioned to you guys when I saw them filming, it was like it was almost 2 years ago. Mm. But she was wearing the pantsuit that she bought it in, right? So
That's funny.
So yeah, well, so they must have been filming that particular scene, right? So
yeah.
Interesting. Hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it just shows you how long things go into post production, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it was interesting, and then and also the I forgot the name of the character who's the Homelander's advisor comes back and says this was the plan. That was kind of
Sage, Sister Sage. Yeah.
What did you think about that twist? That was kind of an interesting.
It was. And it's funny because when she kind of gets ousted by Homelander a couple episodes ago, you find yourself sort of thinking, well, that's weird. If she's the smartest person, shouldn't she have seen that coming? And to see her come back and be like, yeah, this was the plan all along. I was working you as well. And it was always my intention for the Speaker of the House to become the president. By getting both Newman and the president out of the way was a pretty clever twist. And of course, because then the Speaker of the House immediately says, oh, Homelander, you're in charge. I put you in charge. And yeah, so that's how we end up where we are. So yeah, really smart twist.
Yeah. And I think, was this the episode where Firecracker kind of gets this, the real sense of fear? She fears Homelander now because she's seen how far he can go, right?
Yeah, I mean, the scene where he dispatches the Seven to basically go through the building, killing everyone. Mm-hmm. Oh, not that Ashley. You're not supposed to kill that Ashley. You're supposed to kill the other Ashley.
Yeah. It's funny because I noticed when they made a point of saying Ashley earlier in the episode, and I thought, that's odd that the two characters have the same name, right? So
yeah.
And that pays off, right? Yeah. Well, also, Homelander has been, I think he was taking V last season, right? So His you know, emergence as a soup or
Butcher,
soup.
You mean Butcher, yeah.
Butcher, yeah, Butcher. What did I say?
Yeah. You said Homelander.
Oh, I meant Butcher, where he, you know, things come out of his centered, you know, body and tendrils come out and start pulling people apart, right? So
yeah. Yeah, it's funny too, because, you know, they kept sort of saying, you know, oh, long-term damage. And then at the season, there's some serious damage. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how they play that character in the final season. He thinks he's doing the right thing, but clearly doing it the wrong way, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that I watched that episode. I got to say this too, right? So I watched that episode, and I was on the farm, you know, visiting family, watching it on my Vision Pro, and I took off the headset right after it was over, and I walked around the corner to where they were watching the Republican convention.
Yep.
And I swear to God, it was the same TV show.
Yeah.
I just looked at it, and then, you know,
Right? That's the kind of jingoistic populist stuff we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, you walk around the corner, and then you know who comes out, and he's got his name in the big giant letters, you know, like as if we don't know who he is, right? Mm-hmm. And it was the same, like, spectacle, you know, not you know, like, and again, Homelander reminds me of like giving like. Like, the thing is, like, I've always kind of wondered, okay, was Superman such a nice guy, but what if he decided he wasn't? I mean, there was that movie where, what was it called? Brightside or something. It was some...
Brightburn.
Yeah, where Superman or Super Kid is not a good kid, right? So,
yep.
That was, because, you know, when you have that much power and you know, humans are just pawns to play with, right? That's kind of sort of where Homelander is.
It's a tricky thing because Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander, is so good. Like, so good. So talented. And yet he's playing this character where, you know, you saw the episode earlier this season where he's like goes back to where he was raised and he talks about like the horrible conditions in which he was raised.
Yeah.
But then he massacres everybody. So you're like, on one hand, you feel a little sorry for him. You're like, God, this poor kid was just treated like a, you know, an absolute monster. And, you know, they, you know, obviously nothing you'd wish on a child or a person. And yet he is a monster. And he's not like, it's not like he's on a healing journey. He's on a, like a monstrous, you know, like he's making things worse for himself. It really is a feat that you find yourself so drawn to this character who's clearly such a mess. You know, that is the thing that I think both House of the Dragon and The Boys have done really well, is you find yourself at times rooting for people who are not good people. You know, it was the last couple episodes where you see Kristen Cole just being like, clearly like PTSD. He saw the dragons fight. He saw half of his soldiers get turned into, you know, charcoal briquettes. And then he's just messed up by that. And like, he's an awful human being. The character is a mess. And yet you still are like, oh, that is not good. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And it's the same thing here. Like, you know, Homelander's a mess, but you're also like completely captivated by him. Butcher's a mess, but the same thing. Like, there's such complexity to the characters. It really does make for great television.
Mm-hmm.
I do a little spoiler-free Deadpool and Wolverine.
Sure. Let's talk about Deadpool and the Wolverine. Yeah. Our like hot take review, because we just literally watched it.
Yeah, really. It's fresh off the grill here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I obviously we don't want to go too far into the spoilers. We won't do that to anybody, because chances are you might be going out in the next few days to watch it. You might be waiting a little bit, so we'll try not to get too far into the spoilers. So I will say that I loved parts of this movie. I was a little disappointed by other parts of the movie. I would say overall the consistency was pretty high. I thought the humor, the jokes come a mile a minute. The chemistry between Jackman and Reynolds as Deadpool and Wolverine is fantastic. The action pieces are incredible, and I have no qualms about either of those things. I laughed, and I was impressed by those two things. The only part that kind of has nagged at me a little bit afterwards was part of what I loved about Deadpool 1 in particular, 2 as well, but to a lesser extent, is the relationships with the other characters. And the motivation behind this movie, you know, without getting too spoilery, is just that he has to save his friends from an evil fate from afar. And so you don't get to see him very much interacting with, you know, Marina Baccarin's character. You don't get to see him interacting with, you know, Negasonic and Yukio and Peter and, you know, like all these characters, the Colossus, like,
or even Blind Owl, like there's a little bit Blind Owl. There's a more Blind Owl than there is of any other character, but
that to me was a missing element. I love the weird world of oddballs that they had kind of brought together through the first couple of movies, and I feel like that for me was something that I missed a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I thought that many of the scenes where we got, whether it was an action scene or whether it was a character development scene between Deadpool and Wolverine and Jackman and Reynolds, were great. Their chemistry's great. They clearly, you know, both, you know, physically and just the quips and so they, that was very satisfying. I just feel like I don't know if we're going to get much more Deadpool. I don't know if we're going to get any more Deadpool. I don't know if Deadpool's going to pop up in lots of other things, but I love the supporting cast, and I did find myself missing them slightly. It doesn't take away from the fact that there are some really cool scenes in this movie. I laughed out loud easily a dozen times. It's well worth seeing on the big screen. It's a big screen movie. We saw it in IMAX 3D. There were some really cool 3D effects. If you enjoy 3D movies, there's definitely some cool stuff in there. Mm-hmm. There's an action sequence right off the top of the movie that's pretty impressive in 3D. And it goes without saying, and again, we're not going to get into spoilers, but there's a lot of Easter eggs and cameos and just other things as they bring. This is the first time that we've really seen the collapsing of these universes. We've seen a character that was created for the Fox X-Men universe that has been brought into the MCU. The other thing I would just want to say before you do your thing, this is the first R, and it's a hard R, Marvel movie.
Oh, really?
More please.
Really? Okay.
More please. I don't think everyone has to be, and I don't think you have to necessarily, you know, like, I don't need to have, you know, F-bombs and blood and guts and you know, cocaine humor in all of my Marvel products. But this was something that needed it, and I think if they do some of these the right way, they should have, like, Blade is one of the upcoming movies they're working on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Blade should be an R movie. It should be. It's dumb to have a character who carries a katana and doesn't cut anybody. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't need a hard R Spider-Man, and I don't need a hard R Captain America. But in this case, it worked, and I think there's a place for this in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
But is there a new Blade coming as well? Like a new character, new actor? I mean,
yeah, they announced a number of years ago, almost 2 years ago, they announced Mahershala Ali, the Oscar-winning actor,
is going to be because there was the one Blade line spoilers that were
where they reference Blade.
Wesley Snipes says,
"All right, you have to cut that out because that's a spoiler. That's a big spoiler."
Okay, all right.
Just bleep it so that people go, "Wait, what?"
Yeah. We'll just leave the part above it, us like saying you gotta cut that out. There was a lot of it was like Easter Egg City, like including characters that I'm not a huge follower of the X-Men and stuff like that, but all of the the guy with the cards that shows up, I mean, like, I was not expecting him. I haven't seen him since you were playing some of those Marvel games used to be on the systems, right? Yeah. So,
yeah, no, I think obviously there was a smorgasbord of things they could have done. Some of them could work better than others. Some of them led to some pretty funny jokes. There's a couple of good jokes at the expense of the Fox, X-Men, Fantastic Four, Daredevil, sort of, you know, that whole universe. And then, yeah, certainly no shortage of jokes at Disney's expense, too.
And Fox,
But it was definitely kind of fun to see them combining all their toys in one play box, in one toy box, right? Like, this is the first time where they can be like, yeah, we can take this from over here, we can take this from over here, and they can kind of bring it all together. And I think it worked really well in that way. I guess the question is, you know, then what? You know, like, this is the only Marvel real And I'm going to say it. Yeah, it's the only real MCU Marvel movie this year. We're getting Venom Part 3, Venom The Last Dance. I'm not even going to talk about that. But this is the only MCU movie we're getting this year. So to have it be the only movie, to have it be the thing that just sort of stands alone, I'm curious to see where they go from here. They make a lot of good jokes at the expense of this last phase of the MCU.
And Feige,
And Kevin Feige, and just they kind of, there's a self-awareness to it, which for a character who breaks the fourth wall makes sense. It'll be interesting to see where they go from here. I'm really curious to see if this was kind of the coda to this particular phase of the MCU and where they start. Because the next movie that's coming out is Captain America Brave New World, which is coming in February. So that's kind of a new, you know, like new status quo. We're doing something else, you know. I'll be curious to see how they decide to bring this into the next phase and what we should take away from this that matters. And because we know we're getting a Fantastic Four movie down the road. You know, they are eventually going to phase the X-Men in. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how they sort of tie all this together. But in the meantime, I mean, man, it's a great popcorn movie. If you want to go and just laugh and see things blow up and, you know, guys with knives and swords and claws and stuff do exciting action-y things, it's a home run. It's an absolute 10 out of 10. You know, is it a perfect movie? No, absolutely not. But is it an enjoyable movie? Yes, absolutely an enjoyable movie. Well worth going to a theater to see.
Yeah, definitely was one of the highlights of this year so far in terms of seeing theater movies, right? So,
yeah, I mean, it's not Dune 2, it's not Denis Villeneuve, but it blows up great.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, to be honest with you, I probably enjoyed this movie better than even Dune 2, right? So,
wow.
Yeah,
I mean, the action set pieces in this were fantastic. They were undeniably. Well,
you know, good. I'm not a fan of the hold my beer, get a big, you know, bag of popcorn kind of.
Yeah, that's more high mayonnaise jam. Yeah,
yeah, and even though this movie is that, I mean, it was still quite enjoyable. Like, you know, I don't even know if you really even need to know a lot of the backstory behind the other movies, whether it's Wolverine to be honest with you, I thought this was more about Wolverine and Deadpool than it was about Deadpool per se. Right. And I love how they tossed in the, you know, the stuff from Loki, you know, without spoiling too much, you know,
mm-hmm.
And some of the,
there are a lot of threads and, that's the benefit now of having 30 movies plus, you know, TV shows plus. You can dip into tons of stuff and, you know, you don't have to beat it over the head. You don't have to explain everything. If people want to know more, they can watch it. Or if they watch it, they get more out of it. But yeah, I think, again, this is if you're just going to sit down and watch something happen.
Yeah, sometimes it's just a passing crack that he makes, just, you know, a little one liner that just takes down an entire section of the MCU, right? Yeah, that's good. I enjoyed it. I don't know if if you hadn't told me it was an R movie, I don't think I would have noticed haven't we sort of seen that kind of physicality before? I know some of
the other Deadpool movies, yes, and in some of the I honestly the two things that were above what we would normally see in the MCU are the language.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of raw language,
colorful
drug
language,
references,
yes.
A lot of drug references.
Yes. Yeah.
And, blood, like a lot of blood, which is something you don't necessarily like that one scene near the beginning of the movie. There's a lot of blood.
Well, that scene and the one later on too. Right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. So those things I think are the things that move it into that.
Those are the category. Game of Thrones kind of things, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I don't know where they found the dog, though.
She won a contest. I was reading about it online. She won a contest for ugliest dog in Britain.
Really?
And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so they saw this heinously ugly dog and cast her in the movie. And I've seen pictures. She's a really ugly dog.
Well, and the other thing too, I heard an interview with Ryan Reynolds the other day, and apparently he had a meeting with Madonna.
Mm-hmm. And, he had to do it in person.
Yeah. And he went to her and said, I want to use this song in the movie. And she said, by all means. And she even gave him some ideas on how to take it to the next level. So part of what we saw of that song being used, Madonna's song being used in the movie, was mm-hmm. Madonna's influence too.
Yeah, I saw pictures of her. She was at the premiere the other day in
New York.
I want to say London.
Okay, because there was one in New York as well. Because
yeah, they did an LA and New York and a London. I think she was at the London. But yeah, mm-hmm. again, she had to be spoken to before she was willing to sign off on.
And she doesn't normally. Apparently, she normally doesn't let her stuff be used in movies. So
yeah, yeah. But it was great. Like it fit really well with the movie. So
mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, yep. Cool. All right, let's move on to our picks, I guess, or watch list. Yeah. If you call it here.
I have a couple things. I watched the entirety of the Exploding Kittens series that is now on Netflix. This is based on the Oatmeal and the cartoonist that does that, who has gone on to do a number of popular games like Exploding Kittens and Poetry for Neanderthals and all, you know, Throw Throw Burrito and all these fun games that that my kids are fans of. And I wasn't sure what to expect.
Is it a TV show or a game? I'm not following.
So there is a card game, there is a video game, and now there is a TV series.
Well, this is like a Cards Against Humanity kind of idea, right? Sort of not the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little more of an active game than an embarrassing game. It's like a little bit different style of game, but it's a fun card game, it's a fun video game, and it's a fun show. It's a little inconsistent. It's 8 episodes. It digresses a little bit. But the idea is essentially that God is sent down from heaven to sort of learn a humbling lesson, and is sent down in the form of a cat, and then has to sort of bond with people and sort of learn empathy in doing that. Simultaneously, the devil is also sent up from hell to go and do some stuff on earth. And so it's about sort of this battle between good and evil that happens in the guise of cats. It's pretty funny. I really enjoyed some of the humor. Some of it was a little over the top, and some of it was a little bit drawn out. But overall, I'd say it's a solid B. It was worth watching. I enjoyed it a good deal of it. It was over pretty quick. It's only half hour episode, so like the whole thing was over in like 3 hours and change. So yeah, if you're looking for just something that's a nice, easy watch, it's certainly something you could put on and still sort of have your phone and watch bits and, you know, do other things. But yeah, it was enjoyable. I liked it.
So speaking of cats, so you still haven't watched Extraordinary, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I watched that when it was on. I watched the first season when it first came out, and watched the second season as soon as it came out. Yeah. I love Extraordinary.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other one is Time Bandits, which both of us watched. The new Time Bandits series from Taika Waititi dropped on Apple TV Plus this week. They dropped the first 2 episodes, and they've already scheduled 2 episodes for next week. So it looks like they're doing 2 at a time. The episodes are only, I think the first one's a little longer. It's like 40 something minutes, and the second one's only 30 minutes. So it's a pretty tight show. It's pretty much a more modern take, and probably a more woke take, if that's, you know, it's probably not necessarily the right term, but you know, they're not all little people, and you know, obviously they've made things a little more progressive in adding some more women and doing different things. But that being said, it does kind of capture the similar sense of humor, and it definitely has that sort of wackiness to it that I really enjoyed about the original movie. That sort of weirdness, non sequitur, sort of weird, fun kind of stuff, which is what originally drew me to the movie when I was a kid. There, you know, having Taika Waititi play God and having Jemaine Clement, his writing partner, play the ultimate evil is a funny twist. And yeah, it's a very watchable show. We talked about it earlier, but the young man who they cast as Kevin, the main character, who basically his life gets turned upside down when these time traveling bandits show up in his bedroom one day,
which is a central portal
that can transport through, you know, space and time. And his young man's name's Kal-El, which I thought was great. Superman, of course. He does a good job of sort of grounding these fun, sort of weird, wacky characters. We talked about Lisa Kudrow, who is obviously the sort of biggest name outside of Taika Waititi in this. and she plays this sort of leader, the Reg character from the movies. And it's fun. It's funny. You know, they're clearly not the greatest bandits or thieves in the world, but they, you know, they have a mission and they're kind of all banded together. And if they sort of take Kevin under their wing and they're traveling throughout history trying to do stuff, you know, there's some funny stuff in you know, ancient the ancient Mediterranean. There's some funny stuff in ancient England. You know, like there's lots of stuff to enjoy. I thought it was a promising one. The only thing I will say is it's pretty bang on as far as like, it's not really diverging from the plot or anything. Maybe there will be a little more of that.
Well, they do go to different places. Like they don't go to the same parts of the past that Kevin goes to. Although Cassandra, who's the Cassandra, if you know who Cassandra mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. tells Kevin that he will, you know, he'll give advice to gods and he'll meet, you know, like, because I think Deshaun Connery character in the original movie was Agamemnon, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So kings. Oh, he'll advise kings or whatever, right? So.
Yep. Yeah. No, I think it was off to a promising start, and I will definitely keep watching it. I think I'll be really curious to see if they do start to kind of carve their own path. That, you know, I don't remember. Was it you said earlier? Like, is it necessary? I don't think it is necessarily. I think. To remake this, like
no, yeah.
There are some parts of the original 1980s film that, you know, yeah, haven't aged terribly well. But all things being equal, it's, you know, yeah, it's a fun adaptation of something that was really good already. So your mileage may vary.
So I gotta ask, did the joke about the at the very end of episode two about the cherub? What do they call the special drink that they give to God? Cherub breeze or
it's cherub latte or something like that.
And he's like, would you like a top up? And,
that's clearly just urine. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he goes, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is urine.
Yeah. Oh no, that's definitely urine. Yeah. I'm just looking. I just looked it up online. So it says there's 10 episodes and they are doing 2 per week. So. The whole thing is over by the third week of August. So yeah, it's basically on for 28 days.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a fan of my review of it, if you're a fan of the original movie, and you're expecting a new take on it, you're not going to be rewarded in that sense. I mean, it is pretty much very similar to the original movie, right? In terms of how the plot goes and stuff like that and the importance of Kevin. But there are a lot of sight gags and a lot of, you know, one-liners and stuff like that are in this that you know, they weren't in the original one, but, and they're not as bumbling. I mean, I find that the bandits are not as bumbling as our original characters were, but, cause they were kind of just making it up as they went along. Right.
They were, but it was almost, that's one of the things that hasn't aged as well. Like they kind of treat the little people like they're kind of bumbling circus, know what I mean? Like they kind of treat them a little disrespectfully
in the original. Yeah.
In the original, and here they are also bumbling, but obviously the laughs aren't at the expense of the fact that they're, you know, physical appearance. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's interesting because I sort of said it was odd that I thought the Supreme Being, or I think he's a fallen angel. I think, but his crew, I thought they were portrayed by little people, but they're not. They're actually played by regular sized folks. Mm-hmm. It's only the cherub is probably the one exception, but
yeah,
So it definitely is if you're a fan of the Terry Gilliam work, you're not going to be disappointed in this, thinking it's a different take. But if you're a Taika Waititi, you know, What We Do in the Shadows kind of fan, you're going to love this, right? So. And Flight of the Condors?
Concords.
Flight of the Concords. Concords. Those will definitely hit the mark. So my pick is, I watched a movie. I saw a preview of this movie. It's called The Landscape with Invisible Hand, and it's the name of a painting because it's a future take on, like, you know, like a 2-3 years from now in the future. I don't know what year it's supposed to be actually, but it's about these young two kids in school, like a girl and a guy, And he paints. He does paintings, and so each sort of section of the movie starts with a painting that he did, and shows the title and that kind of stuff. But the gist of it is that the extraterrestrials have landed on Earth, right? And they're smarter than us, right? Mm-hmm. And they have so they've taken over the whole education system, and so all the kids put these temporal these lobes, these devices on their heads, so that thoughts can be projected into their heads. So it's a very Vision Pro kind of idea, right? But but the gist of it, and this is all in the trailer, so I'm not giving too much away, but the gist of it is that the aliens don't have relationships like we do. They don't have male, female, and they don't have concepts of things like love. Right. So, but they have very much like social networking. You do get points, and you do get like the points you get by, and what it is the audience is the aliens are watching us on Earth with these devices that we wear on our foreheads. And, so the young boy and the girl, like the teenager boy and the girl, they're like, you know, seniors in high school, whatever, let's say they're in love, right? Mm-hmm. And the aliens are fascinated by this relationship of these two young kids that are, you know, are in love with each other, and the bond is developing and that kind of stuff. And so they get rewarded with cash, because in this new society, the income streams are all based on what the aliens are handing out, not what skills you may have had as a human being previously, right? And one thing I didn't say about the young man is he's African American, and there's a whole dynamic between the girl's family is now destitute because they've lost all their jobs, they lost their incomes, and they see the young black family as being rich and affluent, and the son at one point says to them, "Really? Did you study history at all?" Like, you know, because it's like the tables have turned kind of thing, right? And but it's just the perception of the white folks. But the aliens are particularly funny too, because they're kind of square with sort of, and they're not drawn like, you know, they're not humanoid, right? Let's put it that way, right? So they're kind of like puppets or animatronics, or they're like like 3D animation, right? But they're super. It's a super compelling movie, and it's just like a little love story, but you know, between these two, this young couple, and this sci-fi weird nerdness, right? So, and it's got an art twist in it too, right? So, yeah, definitely check it out if you're into any of those topics, you know.
Yeah, where is it on?
I believe it's on Prime. Yeah, so that would be my pick for the week. And then I'm started watching Umbrella Academy to get caught up. And so I think I'm halfway through the first episode.
Watched the last season, right? Yeah.
I'm at where they come back, and at the end of season two, I guess it is, they land back in the house, and turns out it's not the Umbrella Academy, it's the Sparrow
Academy. Yeah.
Academy, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I take it this is based on a comic book too, right? Have you read the whole series, or?
I have.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Is it staying true to the series, or
not,
somewhat?
No, it's true to the tone, but it's not necessarily true to the detail. The comic is a little more. It's not a literal comic. It's a little more abstract. I think you'd enjoy it as a piece of art. So it's definitely got a different vibe to it. I really enjoy the show for what it is. That it sort of takes the ideas and kind of runs with them in the same way with The Boys. Like, I love The Boys, and The Boys captures the vibe of the comic very much, but the stories are very different.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on the X and the Instagram at JPK News, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
Cool.
Where can you find Jaime? Wait.
I'm pretty sure it's Dev with the Hair at one and only place, and that's in the TVA, right?
That's right.
Yeah. No, he only has one timeline. He's only on Twitter. Formerly known as X, huh?
The Sacred Lopez timeline?
Yeah, the Sacred Lopez timeline on Twitter, yeah. Where he is Dev with the Hair.
Dev with the Hair.
All right. My name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A on the Twitter machine, the Instagram machine, the X machine. Pretty much anywhere. And I normally would say see you in the future, but I learned the other day that if I say merci, rendezvous à l'avenir, which is French for see you in the future.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah. I don't know about the l'avenir translation, but rendezvous is once again, we'll see you sort of thing.
Yeah, see you again. Yeah.
See you again. Yeah. So, l'avenir, I don't know what that means, but I tossed it. I was translating some stuff for one of my apps last week, and that's what came up. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So, there you go.
Bien sûr, c'est magnifique.
Yeah, rendezvous, l'avenir. À l'avenir. Okay, ciao.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Au revoir. Allez-vous-en.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
It's Tennant. Yeah, that's right.
Which one used to say Geronimo? Didn't one of them say Geronimo too?
Geronimo, yeah. That does sound familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was Matt Smith. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to go turn into a pumpkin now.
That's probably a wise idea.
Cool.
All right. I will see you in the future.
Yeah, bye.
Hi, too.
L. It's yep. For the way
that's who you think it is. The Grimace mug, the Hello Kitty keychain, Barbie herself. For a limited time, your favorite McDonald's collectibles filled with memories and magic are now on collectible cups. Get one of six when you order a collector's meal at McDonald's with your choice of a Big Mac or 10-piece McNuggets. Come get your cup while you still can. And participate in McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.